The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And hidden friends around the world, the news is pretty dependable today. You can depend upon news, it's all bad. War, terrorism, kidnapping, murder, crime, it's all up. Governments are down, they're toppling. The economy, well, it's staggering along. We have deep economic difficulties and malaise here and there in country after country. Wherever you look, whether you're talking about the home, the attack upon the American home, the disintegration of the home, or community and society, whether you're talking about child crime, brutalization in sports, whether you're talking about entertainment pictures, it seems the news can be depended upon to do that. You know, I run across more and more people who just don't bother to read the news anymore. They prefer the comics and sports pages, or maybe just nothing at all. Matter of fact, I was just reading a letter. We had a subscription cancellation recently, the plain truth, from just such a person who just didn't want to be bothered with the facts. He said, cancel my subscription. He said, it's just too gloomy. I mean, you tell it like it is, but it's just too gloomy, and I just don't want to read about how bad everything is. You know, even the president not long ago said he had had it with all the gloom and doom announcements about things that are wrong in the country. I could scarcely believe my eyes, but I read that with a little bit of skepticism and then decided to reply to it in a personal and current number of the plain truth about some of the empty optimism, because I had spoken out plenty of times and will continue to do so about the great dispatch which I have for the office of the presidency of the United States. I had decried the strange preoccupation from the American media with a presidential split that had occurred, and I got quite a bit of reaction out of that as a result of the Speechcock column in plain truth. But I had to respectfully disagree in the latest issue because Mr. Ford had recently felt like rebuking some of the U.S. prophets of doom, and I've sometimes been lumped in with some of whoever these prophets of doom are, because I tell things that are kind of bad. I mean, when crime is up, I say crime is up. When divorce is up, I tell people divorce is up. When governments are toppling, I tell them governments are toppling. And when the economy is in chaos, I say, hey, the economy is in chaos. Now, some people seem to like being told the truth about what is happening, and more than that, why it is happening, and if there is a cause for every effect, and if we would get busy and discover what is that root cause, instead of treating the effect, we could remove the problem. But others would prefer not to hear about it at all. The president was speaking in a strong partisan speech, such as he has made recently in cities all over the country, to the tribune of some of his own members of his own political party in Washington. He really ought to be sitting in Washington dealing with the issues instead of pounding the streets of America, getting shot at, the chances are. All the while saying he doesn't want to hear it about all this crime. Anyway, he was speaking in Dallas, and he felt like rebuking some of the prophets of doom before 5,000 Republican women. He said, and I quote, I have heard too much from people who say everything is falling apart, how the quality of life in America is sliding downhill, how the dollar is worthless, how murderers and muggers have driven everyone behind locked doors, and how even the president of the United States could stop visiting public places and seeing the American people. He went on to say that he had, quote, had it with pessimists saying such things. He seemed to be writing a self-fulfilling prophecy of doom for America. He said, and I quote, I reject such pessimistic scenarios, end quote. I have to say, Mr. President, I respectfully disagree. I don't want to be pessimistic. I would prefer to be optimistic, but I think there is only reason for optimism when you can find optimistic facts, when you can find optimistic trends, when you can find optimistic forecasts. Surely Mr. Ford didn't mean to imply, simply because he felt he had heard too much about these alleged prophecies of doom, that none of the things he stated are true. I mean, because it is true that the quality of life in America is sliding downhill, folks. It's true. That's all there is to it. We see hundreds of thousands of letters. 90,000, 100, 110, 120,000 a month. I don't know what it is exactly, but thousands, tens of thousands, and hundreds of thousands of letters. There are millions and millions of listeners to the broadcast, millions of viewers to the telecast and TV specials, millions of readers of the plain truth on every part of the earth, as far as that's concerned. and the quality of life in the United States is sliding downhill. You can take a look at the average American family. Back off, if you could, as if looking at it from outer space, and look down as if with the eyes of God. You can see beneath the roof of America's home, and look inside the average American family. An empty, hulking shell of what used to be a family scene, with a romantic babysitter and perhaps one or two rooms of children allowed to grow up in hunchback stares of transfixed, avid admiration before a one-eyed monster that is going to devote and demand more of their attention in the years preceding any formal schooling than they will ever spend in formal schooling in the entirety of their lives by the time they're about 6 or 7 or 8 years of age. This is true. This is a fact. It's about how much the average American child is watching television. Take a look at entertainment. At books, journals, novels, newspapers, magazines, television, motion pictures. All that is available in the field of entertainment, of diversion, and brutalization of sports. Look at the schools and school systems, the smell reeking of marijuana to where kids even in grade school can come staggering out of the laboratory because the smog from marijuana was so thick in there, some of them get a high when they haven't even touched the weed. What about the gangs roving the hallways who even formulate little mafia-like organizations now to extort lunch money from other kids? The schools not only in the ghettos, but in the so-called swerves of the suburbs of America, where crime has moved not only into the big city streets and the big city schools, but into the suburbs and the small villages and towns of America. When you read of an entire family in an Iowa farmhouse wiped out, the man 25, the mother 23, a boy and a girl 5 and 10 years of age, when you read of a young fellow who killed his grandparents, buried them in a shallow grave in the backyard of a little farmhouse, and drove the farm tractor repeatedly over the grave to try to eradicate the crime. When you read about brutal murderers the other day who tried to kill a woman by setting her afire in a Los Angeles apartment after a robbery attempt, doused her with gasoline and struck a match. When you read about some of the incredible, insane avalanche of crime that is afflicting our country, dare any of us say, I am tired of hearing how the quality of life in America is sliding downhill. Let me tell you, the quality of life in America is sliding downhill. And the people in America who are living that life and are not buffered and sheltered from it, so we're not playing a bizarre game of hide-and-go-seek. Let's hide our eyes from reality and go seek our pleasures and pretend all the problems are not true. Let me tell you, the people waiting in line for the unemployment check, the people waiting in line for the food stamps, the people who are worried about the busing problems of a city such as Boston, the people who are deeply concerned with heavy taxes and rising prices and the soaring cost of gasoline and housing, and clothing. And when it comes time to go to school and the kids can't even take enough money together for a new pair of pants that blaze with holes in the ones he's got. Well, parent after parent in America, the tens of millions, no, perhaps even more, would stand up and say, yes, Mr. President, the quality of life in America is sliding downhill. He said, he'd had his people who said how the dollar is worthless. Now, I think anybody who says the dollar is worthless is exaggerating. I wouldn't want to say the dollar is worthless. But let's put it another way. Let's say it is worth less. Actually, that's what the word means. Yeah, the dollar is worth less, Mr. President. Now, he said recently, when he was talking about not bailing out New York City, that the government could just print more money. But you see, I don't like to hear a president say that. I said that. I know the government can do that. But when a president says that, it kind of kills me a little bit. All we got to do is print a batch more. And I would like to add the word worthless money. Because it's not really money. Money is a kind of a funny term. Money is something you could leave from taco shells to rubber bands to, I guess, leather belts or buckles on your feet. Money could be chocolate bars, nylons, and cigarettes as it became in Europe after World War II. It was reduced to a barter method of exchange. Money is anything in which people have confidence with the means and medium of exchange, whether it's paper clips or paper airplanes. Now, as long as the confidence means of belief in the American dollar continues, then someone would be in error in saying the American dollar is worth it. But he would be absolutely correct if he keeps saying it is worth less. because it is every year worth less and less. We were talking recently about a fellow who had the experience of selling a car for more than he had paid for it. But we got to really talking about that and decided, no, not really. Actually, he'd taken quite a loss because the difference was, you see, he had forgotten to figure in there the fantastic deterioration of the purchasing power of the dollars he received in 1975 as opposed to the dollars he had spent in about 1972. Actually, he'd taken a loss. A lot of times we don't understand that. People are given fantastic salary increases, and those increases are not increases. Oftentimes, they are barely staying even, and sometimes a fairly whopping salary increase doesn't even keep you even because the rising costs have run away beyond any meaningful salary increase. So it is true, Mr. President, that the dollar is worth less. It isn't true that it's worth nothing at all. That would be an exaggeration. He said, we've heard too much about how murderers and muggers have driven everyone behind locked doors. Now, I don't think anyone could say that the murderers and the muggers have driven everyone behind locked doors. That's an exaggeration. But they have driven too many people behind locked doors. And there are many people in America who live a life of fear. Our very architecture has changed as a result of rising crime. A fantastic new industry has virtually been created as a result of the rising crime. Private investigative and detective agencies, private security forces, and all the uniforms, the hope that surrounds some of the senior citizens' villages, complete with drawbridges and armed guards, I assume, and maybe alligators in the pool, all of the little peeping devices, the eradication of shrubbery and low-growing trees and hedges around the backyard, the iron millwork industry that went booming up out of all proportions to any known percentages of iron millwork and so on to windows, which we thought went out with maybe the Spanish Revolution or something, or the French Revolution, but it's back. Now you see American buildings, American homes. You ought to take a look at the new FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C. They say things got wrapped. Well, okay, maybe it's got wrapped inside, but they're never going to get outside. You ought to take a look at that. It looks like a great, monolithic, gigantic block of solid rock. You wonder, is there a window in that place? Here, polished straight up and down granite. We had to, in the United States, begin to design and engineer public buildings, especially in Washington, D.C., where the president spends much of his time, where it's obvious walking down the street that we are even engineering our buildings and designing our buildings and our homes because of a fear of riots, of violence, of bombs, of crime. And the average citizen does live with a gigantic wad of keys in his pocket. Sometimes two and three and four of those just for the front door. People in apartments and condominiums these days have to have maybe up to four keys. And some of them maybe are two keys for a combination kind of a lock where it takes both keys at the same time. A lot of people can't get in the garage without a special little signal or a combination key device of some kind. Then there's a key to unlock the door to the elevator. Then there's a key to the elevator. Then there's a key to get into the apartment, or maybe two of them. Once in, they bolt the door, they lock the door, they might lock the door, then they safety latch the door, and then they probably put a great big bucket of arsenic or acid or something above the door with a trip chair for the crook to fall over. As a matter of fact, I heard that the ultimate of that was that some guy who wasn't back in Iowa who had rigged his farmhouse with a shotgun. Now, I'm telling you, this guy really had the ultimate in thought to keep out crooks. And so he rigged his gun in a living room, pointed at the front door, and he put a tripwire somewhere so if anybody opened the front door, he'd catch a shotgun blast in the chest. Maybe it was a pistol, I forget. Don't quote me. Anyway, it was a gun trap. And then he had a lot of time. Crooks keep out, you know. Crooks not wanted. Muggers stay away. Robbers do not enter because I have rigged the place with a gun, and you're liable to get yourself shot. Well, you know the rest of the story. Somebody did break in. Somebody did get shot. But what happened? I don't know if the guy did it from the prison hospital or what, but he was seriously injured in trying to break into this farmer's home in spite of all of his warnings to the contrary. And he sued the farmer who had rigged his home with a gun, and the farmer lost everything he had.
When you heard about the law, I heard it explained in California that they've got a law now that says you can't, you know, all the gun excitement that's going on, a volatile issue about handguns. Everybody is arguing that you've got to have a handgun so you can protect yourself from a criminal. Let me tell you, the law so states that if a crook is in your home, you've got to give him every benefit of the doubt. Don't go whipping out a gun and shooting a dirty crook who's pointing a gun at you. Because if you don't quite kill him, he'll probably sue you for everything you've got and win. And you will go to jail for assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill. Now, if that doesn't happen to you, and you do kill him, his relatives or maybe even some very conscientious lawyer of some kind will probably sue you and take you to court and maybe throw you in jail. Who knows? But now the law reads in California that if there is another room in your home to which you could reasonably escape, let's say you're sitting in your living room, if you've got an upstairs bedroom with a double locking door, okay? A crook breaks into your living room, you're sitting enjoying television. You got a gun there, you say? Don't use that gun. The law says you have got to give him every reasonable opportunity to escape, to avoid burglarizing your home, to avoid killing you, and even though you might turn and point a gun at you. Let's say he points a gun, you whip out a gun, he loses his nerve, and he turns to flee, and just in the excitement of the moment, you shoot him. The law says if you shoot him in the back, there isn't any way you can get out of it. You will probably go to jail. You know, it would do you good, especially some of you people who really believe in this thing of blasting away, kind of like the days of the Old West, with the criminals who invade your apartment or your home, and maybe you've got a gun in your hand, either two or three of them, in drawers all over the house, which is really not uncommon today. I think the President of the United States ought to know that. I think he ought to know they're trying to butter the fourth automobile on the freeways in some big city who's got a gun in it somewhere. I think he ought to know that there are millions of Americans with guns who are increasingly ready to use them. Instead of saying, well, he just had it with gloom and doom people who were talking about murderers and mothers and driving everybody behind locked doors. I think you ought to know how bad crime really is, and especially as having been the victim of two assassination attempts within a period of a couple of weeks. You'd think, certainly, if anyone knows how bad the crime picture is in the United States, it is the President. But no, you better check the laws in your local area. Call your local police department and ask if there's someone to whom you could talk about the laws involving defense of your property with a deadly weapon. Because they're quite stringent in some cases. And at least in California, it states that you have to prove that you need every reasonable attempt to get to a more secure part of your home. If he follows you into the bedroom, you have to go into the bathroom. If he follows you there, you're supposed to jump into the shower. I guess. I don't know. And close the door, you know. And then finally, when he's got you, how are you going to prove all of this? What's he supposed to do? Leave a trail of blood? But anyway, that's the way the law seems to read. But it is true that there are millions of Americans locked up behind locked doors at night, afraid to go out, living in fear because of crime. He mentioned that he had had it with people who talk about all of this quality of life falling down, and also how even the President of the United States had stopped visiting public places and seeing the American people. Well, I don't know about that part of it. Maybe it's politically expedient for Mr. Ford to appear to want to mix it up with people, but deep down in his heart, does he really? It's not that he distrusts the American people. When you say the word the American people, you like to think of the broad majority. And you like to think that the broad majority are honest. You don't like to think of the fact that one out of nine shoppers is a shoplifter. You don't like to think of the fact that 70-80% of all white-collar workers are part or full-time shoplifters and criminals. You don't like to think of some of the statistics of the actual trends of crime, of dishonesty, lying, cheating, chicanery, getting an income tax, getting away with loopholes in the law, etc. That is the average American game or way of life. You like to try to kid yourself as a broad majority, you know, 70, 80, 90%, who are completely driven, pure snow honest. Who wouldn't take you to the cleaners if you gave them a chance, turned your back, and said, go ahead, right there, fifth rib. But it's kind of a A crazy pipe dream if you do take that notion. And statistics don't bear it out. However, it is impressive to see Mr. Ford mix it up with the audiences, to get out among the people. Everyone would like an opportunity to visit with, to meet, to shake the hand of a president. I can appreciate that. But it scares the daylights out of me because I just happen to believe that the consequences of another presidential assassination at a time when the entirety of this world is tottering on the brink of nuclear chaos, when it's in fiscal nightmares in the throes of international monetary chaos, when it's in a desperate energy crisis, when it's in a period of the toppling of government and the total absence of big leaders, powerful leaders, innovative leaders of statesman stature, almost reminiscent of the time in the post-depression era and the pre-World War II era of elderly, old, doddering statesmen in nation after nation and bright, young, would-be new conquerors emerging on the scene like Hitler and his ilk, like the fascists of Italy, and a direct result of laboring out of that time of economic collapse that led to World War II. And here we are in much of the same scenario, like the stage is set for the similar type things happening. No, we can't, no matter whether we are the president or whether we are people on food stamps, hide our eyes from the shocking reality of the destruction of the quality of life in America, the rising crime, the insanity of entertainment. We cannot hide our eyes from reality and make it go away. The only way to solve problems are to admit the problems exist, discover then the cause of the problem, and get about the business of formulating a solution. If you have to deal with the effect, you have to. Obviously, when the effect is there, whether the effect is a burst pipe in your basement or whether it's a child that has run away from home, then that's what you've got to deal with right now, because that's the imminent, that's the immediate, that's the emergency. But once you've tried to settle that one emergency effect, you've got to wonder about the cause. It's better to wonder about the cause before the effect comes to exact its penalty. It's better to remove causes before we suffer the effect. But hiding our eyes from the myriad problems around us and seeking personal pleasures and pulling ourselves into our own rut is not going to solve anything. When I look at the system of juvenile justice, when I look at the system of recycling criminals, as I said in plain truth, and I look at the unbelievable statistics of the likelihood of people actually paying the penalty for their crimes in the United States, I have to tell the American people that the quality of life is sliding downhill, and that the criminals do seem to have the upper hand, and the crime does. Okay. Horrible to say that. But the actual statistics of arrests and convictions in the face of the monumental, towering national cancer that is crime make it so. And empty optimism, such as that voiced by another political figure some years ago, who was a presidential hopeful. And he said at that time he was absolutely convinced life was going to improve because it couldn't get any worse. It was just a complete philosophical idea that, look, we've reached the bottom. There's only one way to go. That's up. Don't kid yourself. There's a civilization called Sodom and Gomorrah that existed. And there's a biblical prophecy that says we are living in a time not unlike that of Sodom and Gomorrah. Jesus said, remember Lot's wife. Why? Because she was a warning of a person who was so completely jaded, so seared, and so affected by the society in which she lived that even though angelic beings were attempting to virtually drag her out of a society that was so completely destructive to her, it would have resulted in an absolute wreck and ruined life, complete and total destruction of character, and loss of salvation eventually, and yearning for it. And it's a perpetual warning to all the world, to those who would yearn for all the abominations of a Sodom and Gomorrah, and yet it seems to want to wallow in open, raw, unbelievable violence, sexual promiscuity, thievery, lying, cheating, every assorted form of brutality, and who lives, as it were, every single day, vicariously, one of the most brutal, militaristic times the world has ever seen. We are losing value. We are losing the work ethic. We are losing the real, dictated meaning of words such as truth, honesty, love, mercy, justice. Instead, we substitute in a situation ethics. And whether or not we believe it depends on how it makes you feel. And do it under others before, or do it under you. And it comes a little bit of agonizing reappraisal of the quality of life in America, because it happens to be a simple fact. That the quality of life is sliding downhill. That the dollar is becoming worth less. That millions and mothers do drive in a few cities behind locked doors, and that the president himself has been subjected to two assassination attempts in a very short period of time. So I know of no other publication that gives me the overview exactly where we are in world conditions, not only domestically, in the United States, and the problems we are facing right now, but also globally, and around the world, and the plain truth. And the plain truth is not empty optimism. It speaks out very powerfully on the issues exactly as they are. For example, the Senate members are saying breaking so much problems, and you've heard, of course, not only the unbelievable reaction in capitals around the world as a result of the military firing squad penalty paid by some terrorists who have been accused and convicted of having assassinated some policemen. But you've also heard about Franco. You know, from many years I have wondered if Steve's eventual position, according to biblical prophecies, about an incumbent in the United States of Europe. And you think the men think it's pain, and it's interesting, and Tyler may eventually become a monarch, rather, than a dictator or a president. But then you read that article in the current number, and after the article on getting off the materialistic merry-go-round about the good life people are trying to live today in spite of all the benefits of potential terror, which will probably want to have to suffer from. You can read about the story's original Halloween in the current number, that would really look good. Ted Armstrong, Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Remember, there is no charge, there's no request for money. So all you need to do is to write to Gunner Ted Armstrong, Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Gunner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Gunner Ted Armstrong, brought to you by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your request along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales.